Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Jamie Bologna. On display now at the MFA are some of the 446 photographs that are recent additions to the museum's photography collection. They include works by Dorothea Lange, Henri Cartier-Bresson, and Diane Arbus, and they are from the collection of Howard Greenberg. Radio Boston's Zoe Mitchell went to the exhibit and met up with Greenberg. Hi, Zoe.
Hi, Jamie.
So, Howard Greenberg, he's not a household name, so tell us the role he played in the history of photography.
Howard Greenberg is a part of this pretty small circle of people who really developed the modern photography market. You know, the group includes curators, historians. Greenberg is a gallery owner and art collector. He founded what's now named the Howard Greenberg Gallery in New York back in 1981. But he really got his start taking, collecting, and selling photographs in Woodstock, New York.
Okay, so we're going to get to the actual pictures in just a second. But what did Greenberg tell you at this MFA exhibit last week?
Yeah, so it opened officially this weekend, but he was there setting up. And on the walls were, as I said, 150 of these vintage photographs, as he calls them, from the 20th century. And I asked him about, you know, how he acquired such an extensive collection and what really got him hooked on photographs in the first place.
If I had to put it in one word, it's magic. You know, I was turned on, so to speak, when I went into the dark room and developed a print. You know, when you put a blank piece of paper into the chemicals and suddenly this image comes up. It's pretty special for the first time. And I'm not the only one who felt that way. I mean, a lot of people have printed photographs and had that same sense of, wow, this is magic. So I always felt that the photographic print was an amazing thing to behold. It was an amazing thing to create when I was a photographer, but even more amazing when I started to discover older photographs with older materials and processes that I couldn't do because the materials weren't available anymore. And that really got me. You know, I loved it. And the show and my collection is all about that. It's about vintage photographs, and yes, there's history and many things, but for me, the most important element is that it's the right print of that image, because there could be many prints. It's photography. There's a negative. You can, you know, duplicate it and all that, but, you know, with vintage photography, each one has its own unique properties, its own unique look, and for me, that's what makes it so special.
I'd love to hear about how you found so many of these prints. Like, what's the process like, and how do you recognize when you found something that has that magic? That's
a good question. It comes out of obsession. I don't know how else to describe it. I'm a collector by nature. You know, I collected baseball cards and so on when I was a kid. But I used to comb the auctions. I lived upstate, and I'd get to Newtown B, and it listed all the auctions all over New England, and if I saw old photographs or, you know, certain names that I've been learning about in the history of photography, I might drive 100 miles just to go to that auction and try and buy something. In Woodstock itself, a lot of the older artists I met, families of artists, they had photographs. So, you know, that was a great deal of it. And also, in those days, you could find great work. It was out there. The market hadn't really developed yet. Things weren't expensive. People weren't looking for them for the most part. And so I enjoyed hunting for old photographs. I enjoyed finding things in attics and flea markets and so on. And it all kind of, you know, came together in that way.
Yeah. And can you talk a little bit more about that? I'd love to hear about how the art world kind of viewed photography at the time you started, you know, taking photography and collecting photography, so like the 1970s, 1980s?
Well, there was pretty much still a strong stigma against considering photography on an equal, you know, plane as other media, painting, sculpture, whatever. Photography always had that problem. It changed a little bit by the 1970s, but not that much. And in my home of Woodstock, at the Artists Association, which was founded in 1930, they actually had in the bylaws that, and I quote, the photographers should hang themselves in the basement. And it really did say that. It meant they should hang their own exhibitions in the basement. Well, that kind of got my juices flowing. I thought, I have to do something for photography here in Woodstock.
We're talking about gallery owner and art collector Howard Greenberg and his personal collection of photographs. 446 are now owned by Boston's MFA, and 150 are on display. And Radio Boston's Zoe Mitchell is still here. She went to the exhibit. So what are some of the standouts?
Yeah, so Greenberg and I walked through the gallery together, and he pointed out a few of his favorites, two of which were by Dorothea Lange. She's an American documentary photographer, best known for this photograph, Migrant Mother.
Yeah, that's the well-known photo of the mother with her two children taken during the Great Depression.
Yep, pretty iconic, comes to everyone's mind, from 1936. And, you know, at one point he actually told me he had this hanging in his home, which was pretty crazy. You know, he says he was worried that it might be too depressing of a photo to have around his young children. At the time. I thought that was interesting. And that's one in the exhibit. Another by Lang is called Plantation Owner, Mississippi Delta, near Clarksdale, Mississippi. That's also from 1939. And this
36.
One, 36, sorry. This one I wasn't familiar with. It features a larger white man. You know, he's wearing suspenders, this brimmed hat, and he's outside this country store. There's like a Coca-Cola sign on the wall, and he's kind of leaning against an automobile. And behind him on the stairs, there's four African-American men. And everyone's kind of looking to one side of the photograph. There's no engagement with one another. Here's Greenberg.
And you right in tell the corner. He's got a certain power over them. I mean, you feel it, right?
Yeah.
And he did. I'm sure he's the guy who was, it was either his farm or the manager of the farm where they were working. He was employing them or maybe barely employing them. You know, it really talks about the relationship between, you know, the local white guy from Mississippi and the African-Americans who are maybe second, third generation slaves.
And most of the time, that's the photograph people have seen, you know, mm-hmm. but it's actually this cropped version. So in this print that Greenberg owns, which came from the full negative, you're able to see something else in the corner. You know, it's a part of another man's face. And Greenberg kind of feels, and he's looking at this group of men, and Greenberg feels this changes the dynamic of the piece.
Mm. Why I like this is because this picture is usually reproduced with this person who's little piece of his face cropped out. And when you look at this picture this way, it becomes a very symbolic photograph. You know, the black workers, the tough old Southern guy who controls them. You can read a lot into it. And it's a very, I think, charged photograph. But when I saw this print, that person who you can barely see, but he's not cropped out because it's the whole negative, is Paul Taylor, who was Dorothea Lange's husband. And what's going on is they're really just talking to each other. You know, it's a very simple moment. And I like that idea that, you know, the reality of photographs, sometimes you have to wonder if what you're seeing is the way it really is, or what you're not seeing is the way it really is.
So he's kind of saying this photograph is really just showing a moment, you know, of conversation between these men and Lang's husband, you know. But as a viewer, you know, even that simple moment for me, you know, the race and power dynamics are still pretty visible, you know, kind of looming over that moment.
So race and power and the MFA, of course, this reminds me of what played out there this summer, where a group of students of color on a field trip were harassed by MFA patrons and staff. That context has to be there. So did you ask him about that?
Yeah, I did ask him about that. You know, when walking around the exhibition myself, I was kind of thinking about that idea. You know, photography is, in my opinion, one of the more easily accessible art mediums for people. You know, you can take photography, you can look at it and see humans, faces, emotion. And Greenberg has said before that he really insists on making his gallery a friendly gallery. So I asked him whether he thought photography could aid in kind of opening up these museum spaces. And his answer surprised me. You know, he's also a businessman and was focused on the role the market plays.
I mean, the only way today to make a conscious effort in doing that would be to show, to maybe seek out and show more women artists and more African-American artists, because those are the two genres, if you will, I don't know if that's the right word, where the politics lie today. You know, everybody wants more of each of those categories, at least in America. And museums are well aware of that. I think it's obvious if you look at the shows and you look at the conversations in public. And galleries generally will reflect that because the market will reflect that.
Yeah, it's like a business answer, kind of. Yeah.
Well, I think that art, capital A art, has always been a field where business aesthetics, scholarly work and opinions, they all go hand in hand. You know, without the business, there's really no art. And that goes back to, you know, the Middle Ages. The artists have to have a way of surviving. Therefore, there has to be a marketplace. And it's nothing new, you know, galleries, yeah. Museums, artists, and so on. They all kind of work together in one way or another.
So, of course, that answer is not going to be enough for everybody, and it's definitely not the whole solution to this issue. Mm-hmm. But what I take away from it is that Howard Greenberg is hopeful that a growing demand for a more diverse range of artists will matter, and maybe that's one way we see these spaces open up and more fully represent our society going forward.
Radio Boston's Zoe Mitchell, always a pleasure. Thank you for bringing this to us.
Thank you, Jamie.
Viewpoint, photographs from the Howard Greenberg Collection, opened last weekend and will be on display at the MFA through the middle of December. Fifty years ago today, nearly 500,000 people traveled to a farm in a small New York town for what would become arguably the most iconic music festival of all time. Woodstock was messy, crowded, and unorganized, and yet the musical performances and the joyous celebration of the counterculture of the 60s turned the three-day festival into a moment that helped define a generation. The lineup was a who's who of rock stars: Santana, Joan Baez, Janis Joplin, The Who, Sly and the Family Stone, and of course, Jimi Hendrix. Hendrix's performance closed out the festival on a high note.
Excuse me while I kiss this guy.
But if you were to boil Woodstock down to one performance of one song from a comfortable perch 50 years later, it has to be his powerful take on the national anthem. At a time of national turmoil, on the heels of the civil rights movement, with the Vietnam War raging, Hendrix's anthem captured the moment, and some considered the anthem controversial or disrespectful, but Hendrix himself disagreed. Here's how he described it while being interviewed by Dick Cavett about the performance.
This man was in the 101st Airborne, so when you write your nasty letters in... When you mention the national anthem and talk about playing it in any unorthodox way, you immediately get a guaranteed percentage of hate mail from people who say,
That's not unorthodox.
It isn't unorthodox?
No, no. I thought it was beautiful.
That's our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Walter Wuthman. Tim Skoog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Jamie Bologna. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.